and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and we all thank you for joining us on this lovely Thursday. It's Valentine's Day, Natalie.
Oh, it is. Where's the like, lovely music?
I know. But anyway, let's get on with it, because I know we all have big Valentine's Day plans. And in the studio with me is The Times Chief Stats Officer, Bill Edgar. And down the line, we're delighted to be joined by Henry Winter. Later on, we'll be discussing how far Manchester United are from the European elite.
But we start with a wonderful night at Wembley for Tottenham. The team sitting third in the Premier League thrashed the Bundesliga leaders Borussia Dortmund 3-0 in the first leg of their last 16 tie in the Champions League. Henry, you were there. We often talk about the improvements in players season by season. Does Maurizio Pochettino just get better and better?
Well, he does, and he makes players better and better. He makes the right decisions during the games. You saw it with his substitution. Llorente came on, first touch, scored. You saw it with the impact that he clearly had on his players at half-time, tactically and also their mood as well. I think he just, obviously wasn't in the dressing room, but all the signals are was that he told them to be bolder. He told the wing-backs to push higher up. And basically just to go for Dortmund. I mean, we've seen in Dortmund's recent games that they're vulnerable to crosses and corners, obviously missing some of their major players at the back, well, actually throughout the team. And Spurs' tactics were right. Three deliveries, three good goals.
Henry, the one thing that impressed me most about Pochettino, the one gamble, and we knew it was coming, but that just blew me away, was Jan Vertonghen. Because obviously he's left-footed. He has played left back before, albeit you don't see it so much anymore. Danny Rose isn't able to start. Ben Davies is injured. He doesn't just play him on a left back. He plays him at left wing back, decides to go with a back three, which basically forces Vertonghen to kind of gallop up and down the wing and cover the whole wing. And Vertonghen's he's a good athlete. He's fast over longer distances. He doesn't have the quickest first step, as you would expect from a guy his size. And he turns in that kind of performance where he's got the movement and he's got the quality on the cross. I thought that was simply that was simply unreal from Pochettino. Were you expecting him to that he would have interpreted the position in that way?
Well, I thought it was quite brave, particularly when you're up against Jadon Sancho and Hakimi as well, who's good from right back. I know he got caught out for one of the goals, but he was, that's quite a strong combination that Dortmund have got on that side. I think that when you look at Spurs over recent years, they've bought good characters as well as good players, and there's very little ego at all in that dressing, which in a way is embodied by Harry Kane, Dele Alli. That, you know, these are not individuals who have an inflated view of their worth. They give absolutely everything. Eriksen, obviously those two were injured last night, but Eriksen gives everything. Heung-min Son, who's been one of the players of the season, embodies that sort of Pochettino ethic of give everything for the team, adapt, play in different positions, help your teammates out. And Vertonghen, you see, the other thing about Vertonghen, he does have that very good understanding with Alderweireld, who was playing on the left of the three centre-backs. So in a way, they could work out how to deal with Sancho, as well as Vertonghen getting forward so effectively, particularly in the second half.
Heung-min Son, he scored the opening goal, of course. He's often, Bill, described, I suppose, as underrated. Is he underrated? Does he deserve to be considered as one of the best in the Premier League?
Yeah, he certainly does. I mean, he was probably underrated a month or so ago, but he's getting so much praise now, you probably couldn't say he's underrated. But his versatility, as we've just been mentioning with Tottenham players, they're very versatile. Certainly with Son, he can play as a conventional winger, he can play as a number 10, but also as a striker. That the goal he scored last night, when Vertonghen put a great crossover, Son just peeled off the defender like a seasoned centre forward. He knew exactly the right thing to do, and it was a nice cushioned shot. So I mean, he's perfect for Tottenham at a time when Kane and Ali are out. Having said that, I still think Christian Eriksen is probably the most important player and will be, unless Kane is in one of his purple patches where he's scoring 1.5 goals a game. I mean, Eriksen is really the master who makes them tick, and he was very good in the second half, I thought.
Rationally, you look at this, and you mentioned Eriksen, you expect a physical drop-off because he's played a ton of minutes. He's got a contractual issue. He's got a big contractual issue to sort out. So does Alderweireld. You know, in normal circumstances, you expect these things to start affecting you. In the same way, all the injuries in normal circumstances should be affecting Tottenham. You know, we don't talk about it anymore, but obviously Pochettino's been linked left, right, and center to Manchester United, right? Now we don't talk about it because, oh, look, Solskjaer's doing well. So, but all these things in normal circumstances should be affecting Spurs and should have been affecting Spurs for a while. And yet they haven't. And I think that speaks to the tremendous chemistry, to the tremendous leadership, to the tremendous environment that Pochettino has created at Tottenham, where they seem insulated from all these things. And look, if they don't go on to win the Champions League or push Liverpool and City in the Premier League, or even if they fall to fourth, all of which might happen, people might be like, oh, look, I told you so. Oh, you know. But the reality is what they have achieved thus far with all these challenges, with all these injuries, is simply out of this world. And I just know that some Muppet this summer, like, oh, look, Pochettino still hasn't won anything. Ha, ha, ha. Look, how Spurs are. Look, they fell from third to fourth or whatever. You know, if they do, and they might not. And that's all nonsense. You have to look at the performances in context. And this is just, I think, it's just tremendous what we're seeing.
3-0 then, they take into that second leg. Do we give Borussia Dortmund any chance of turning this tie around, Henry?
Not particularly, no. I mean, it's a fantastic stadium to go to, and the yellow wall and the fans will be absolutely, you know, up for it, and will create a great atmosphere, and they might have one or two players back, you know, the likes of Royce, people like that. But no, I think the thing is that you can see Spurs going there and scoring, and then they have to score five, and, you know, that's not going to happen, you know, not with the quality of defenders and a goalkeeper like Lloris. So it'd be interesting to see whether actually Pochettino rotates, rests any players or brings players back in to give them a few minutes. So, but just on Gab's point about sort of the Muppets, as he calls them, having a go at Pochettino and his track record. I mean, you know, the views like that are inevitable in football because football is tribal. There's no way that you are going to get many Arsenal fans publicly on social media praising Pochettino or other fans. So Gab, as a sort of clear-eyed observer, you can see what Pochettino is doing. And the other great thing they've got going for them is they're about to move into probably it's going to be definitely the best stadium in the country, probably in the top three stadiums in the world, football-wise, in terms of its design, its closeness to the pitch, roots in the community. Obviously, there are going to be huge transport issues when it opens, which no one's really sort of predicted yet. But it is going to be amazing when they go there. And the buzz around Spurs is going to be absolutely huge. So, yeah, absolutely. The direction of travel, look, trophies will come for this team. The only concern is that one or two of their players, arguably the manager, don't get lured away. But then why leave Tottenham at this point? You know, what, there's 70-odd thousand at Wembley last night, horrible stadium. The fans would much rather go to their new home. That will be absolutely packed. They've got good players. They've got probably in the top three training grounds in Europe, probably in Europe, let alone England. So much is going right for them, and the trophies will come.
Spurs absolutely hit really hard by injuries, but let's also mention, and I agree with Henry, you know, a three-goal deficit is really hard to turn around, and maybe they won't, but mitigating circumstances for Borussia Dortmund, in the same way that Harry Kane and Dele Alli were out for Spurs, they were without Marco Reus, who's more than just a top scorer. He's their absolute talisman. They were without Paco Alcácer, who, you know, who's been a hugely successful striker for them this season after coming on from Barcelona. They were without, at the back, they're without Manuel Akanji, who is leaps and bounds their best central defender. They were without Julian Weigl, who I don't think is good as a central defender, but is a good midfielder, and had been starting in central defense. He ended up having to play Diallo, who would have been another option in central defense, at left back. And he ended up playing Dan-Axel Zagadou, who is 19 years old, and hadn't actually played, I think, since early December or late November, was just coming back from injury. The only reason I point this out is, you know, I'm not taking anything away from Spurs. Spurs were hit hard by injuries. Dortmund were also hit hard by injuries. I would have loved to have seen these two teams at full strength going out there. I look forward to the return leg. Well done. But, you know, just to be fair to Borussia Dortmund and what they dealt with. And also, I thought in the first half, Dortmund played well. It's just that Spurs kicked it onto another level after the break.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Every Thursday at thetimes.co.uk, our very own Bill Edgar provides 11 trivia teasers for you. Here is one for you on this podcast. Paul Scholes this week became the 8th former England international to be a current manager of a league club when he joined Oldham. Who are the other 7?
Ooh. Okay.
Do you think you can get all these?
We can work this out, Natalie.
I think we should try.
Sol Campbell.
Good.
Frank Lampard Jr., that's right. Okay, Steve Bruce. He must have at least one cap,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Is anybody in the Premier League English and a good footballer and managing a club?
I think we've got to go into the lower league.
Sorry, Roy. Okay, so this is your wheelhouse that we're moving into.
I'm thinking.
Right.
Chris Powell,
definitely cap for England. Powell. Okay, so we're up to 4. We're doing pretty well here.
There's a couple that you could debate, but I can't remember if they played for England.
It's okay. Who are they? I'll tell you.
Joey Barton
definitely played for England. And he is the manager at Fleetwood, which is very, very far away.
It is.
Isn't it? Isn't like Fleetwood like near Carlisle or something?
It's in the Lancashire coast.
Which is near
Blackpool
Carlisle.
Beyond Blackpool.
So we're up to 5 now. I would assume there's a higher proportion of English managers the further down you go. We're only missing 2 of them.
I know. We should pat ourselves on the back, really, because we have done quite well.
Are you going to give up? No.
No. Lee Bowyer, Charlton manager.
I didn't even know that. He's definitely former England international. I didn't even know that he was managing.
But now I really haven't.
That's 6. Is Seth Johnson a manager?
I don't think so, no.
Oh. Michael Ricketts? I'm just going to throw out names of random one-cap English.
That's what it has to be. It has to be a one-cap type player. Why don't we say, let's stick around to the end of the podcast. Bill can maybe give us a clue at the end.
Okay.
For the last one.
That's fair.
So stick around to the end of the podcast to find out the answer. While it was a dream night for Tottenham, it was something approaching a nightmare for Manchester United at Old Trafford on Tuesday. A red card for Paul Pogba, injuries to Anthony Martial and Jesse Lingard, and a 2-0 victory for Paris Saint-Germain. Paul Hurst has written in The Times about what United need to do to return to the top table of European football. Henry, you were at Old Trafford. How far off did United look from the elite?
Well, a long way, but I don't think people are particularly surprised by that, given the changeover of managers, given the strange squad that has accumulated. There hasn't been enough proper thinking on that. And I think what Tuesday night showed was the inadequacies in the squad where it needs strengthening, rather than any sort of damning indictment of Solskjaer's managerial abilities. You know, we've seen in recent games, he's got his tactics right, Spurs away, games like that. I just think I thought his tactics were very bold the other night. I thought there was an excitement amongst the Manchester United fans going into a Champions League game, knowing that their team was going to attack, looking at Martial running, Rashford running, Lingard was harrowing, closing down early on. There was an energy to Manchester United. And then the game plan gets undermined by losing 2 really important players, as you say, the injuries to Lingard and Martial, either side of half-time, you know, and they didn't continue. And the replacements, Alexis Sanchez and Juan Mata, are different players. Particularly Alexis Sanchez, it's not working for him. Juan Mata has not got that sort of burst of pace, or maybe the defensive side of the game. So, it completely changed it. So I think there was a lot of sympathy for Solskjaer. But also, again, huge respect for a PSG team, which has acquired, just like Manchester United did in the 90s. They went to all these away games, to Germany, to Monaco, and just acquired that ability, became almost sort of battle-hardened. Manchester United have got to do that again. PSG, even with injuries, are gaining that understanding of how to win in Europe. The tactics from Tuchel were superb. The simple thing of putting Marquinhos on Pogba to disrupt him, to disrupt the supply line to Rashford, which has been so effective for United under Solskjaer. You know, defence was strong. Kylian Mbappe is the best young player in the world. We know that, with that phenomenal pace. I mean, if I had a real criticism of Manchester United, it was with one or two individuals. Pogba, I thought, was poor and actually was having a few niggles in his tackles. And I thought Ashley Young, for someone who's supposed to be a captain, to push Di Maria, when he was already on a booking, to push Di Maria down into the hoardings was just naive, reckless, and he could have been sent off for that, another yellow card. So I thought it was a bit naive by some of the Manchester United players. But look, Solskjaer has changed the mood there, and one difficult evening against an outstanding French team is not going to cloud that.
Henry mentioned there Alexis Sanchez. Bill, what's happened to him? He came on at the end of the first half, and by the end of the 90 minutes, he'd contributed with zero shots, zero key passes and zero dribbles.
Yeah, I mean, he went from being a world-class player at Arsenal, he's gone backwards so far under Mourinho, whose style I don't think suited him at all. It was so negative. It was going to take a while, if at all, to get back to his best. I mean, he has been such a great player. I think it's really worth giving him 10, 12 games, you know, really give him every chance to get back to his best. Although, of course, at the moment, you'd put Martial in ahead of him on the left, because Martial's playing well when he's fit. But yes, it is an issue for United, yeah.
And the numbers, well, they don't favour United in overturning this deficit, do they, Bill?
No, no team has lost the first leg at home of a Champions League tie by two goals and gone on to win the tie, so they'd have to overturn that. And certainly PSG were, I thought they were fantastic. But, I mean, it's a bit much to expect United to be better than PSG already. Solskjaer's turned it around brilliantly. I mean, the main thing is he's just got them playing normally, positively again after 5.5 years of pretty dire stuff quite often, you know, in terms of positivity. Also, he's improved the team a lot. I mean, they've swept aside almost all of the moderate teams. I mean, there was a warning really with the match away to Tottenham when they won, but they were badly outplayed. So when they did come up against the really real elite, they were found wanting it, and again against PSG. And I thought, you know, it's just going to take time, because, you know, look at the best teams, Liverpool, Man City, they play above themselves. They're much better than the sum of their parts. The manager's been there a long time and worked out a whole style of play.
Managers are permanent managers. This guy, as of right now, is still an interim manager.
You know, it's no great surprise. I mean, tactically, they were so much better. They were, you know, when United player got the ball, three or four PSG players swarming around him. It's that sort of tactical stuff that told in the end.
Do you think, obviously, Henry alluded to it, Martial and Lingard going out was a big blow. Hindsight's always 20/20. I wonder if maybe he wasn't, considering they were at home too, he wasn't a little too wedded to this notion of let's beat them with pace, because I heard a lot of people talking about that. Ooh, how will Thiago Silva, who's old, deal with Martial and Rashford's pace? And it's kind of like, never you mind, how do the other guys deal with Mbappe? And not to mention that Thiago Silva may be old, but he's still quick. Kimpembe is quick, and Marquinhos is frankly off the scale. In fact, there's been some suggestion from people who follow PSG that Marquinhos is just as fast as Mbappe. So I wonder if maybe at that stage, would maybe Lukaku and a different approach, might that have given them a different edge at that point?
Yeah, I mean, when it happened, I wrote at the time, why didn't he bring Dalot on at right back and push Ashley Young, because some of Young's crosses attacking from right back were causing a little bit of problems. I just thought when Mata came on, I'm a huge fan of Mata, but more as a 10 than out wide. I think that sort of invited PSG onto that. But while we're talking about Manchester United, we have to know, I'm just heading up to Carrington now to see one of the players, and I just know it's going to be a fairly sort of somber place, because Eric Harrison, who I'm sure you know, you've all met, who's passed away sadly, he's been ill for a while, and he was just such a sort of important part, almost a cornerstone with obviously Sir Alex Ferguson in the building of you know, this great Manchester United, you know, the modern club. Obviously, he helped develop as a youth developer the class of 92, and it's a desperately sad day. And I'm sure that you know the club will be mourning him, and they'll be showing their respect in matches to come. But it's a deeply sad day for the club because of the quality of man he was, because of the character that he instilled in that great class of 92, you know, Beckham, the Nevilles, Scholes, Giggs, Butts, you know, who've all gone on to do, you know, other things in sort of second careers, almost sort of third careers as well. So a very sad day for the club. And I'm sure Manchester United will mark Eric Harrison's passing with great respect and solemnity in the games to come. So, you know, as we're talking about Manchester United, we have to mention Eric Harrison because that's the name on everyone's lips at Manchester United today.
I completely agree. And just quickly to underscore that, I think when he became ill, I think maybe 1 or 2 years ago, there was a very, very moving piece by Gary Neville, I think it was, who went to see him along with other members of the class of 92, and where he talked very openly about the impact that he had on that he had on his life. You know, not just in terms of creating a great footballer, but really helping mold these people. And I think it's obviously a sad day and a loss, you know, not just for Manchester United.
You mentioned the youth there of Manchester United. What about the youth of PSG, Kylian Mbappe? Henry, you saw him in the flesh. He's got the world at his feet, doesn't he?
Well, and their flying feet as well. I mean, he's a remarkable player. I mean, that run, I mean, Eric Bailly is no slouch. And Mbappe gave him sort of five, almost 10-yard start, and he absolutely flew past him to get onto Di Maria's cross in. So, I mean, interesting talking to people at PSG. This says there's very little ego with him. He just wants to go and prove himself as a footballer game after game. He'll play in different positions. He'll play centre-forward for them or sort of cutting in from out wide if necessary. We saw it in the World Cup. He's the best young player in the world. And, you know, inevitably people were making comparisons with Rashford. They're different people, different upbringings in terms of, you know, what they had from their club. Different necessarily mood of the managers as well. And, you know, I'm sure Rashford will go away and look at it and will just appreciate what Mbappe has got, because Rashford's got phenomenal pace. But just to attack the six-yard box, which is what Mbappe does, and Rashford will look at the video and become an even better player. But absolutely, in terms of the world's greatest young player at the moment, it's Kylian Mbappe.
Just very quickly on that, Henry, before you go, what's your take on Rashford? Because, I mean, I know that distinctions between positions up front can be a bit nitpicky at times. And we know, obviously, Rashford effectively, you know, he's done very well at center forward now. Do you think his future, or indeed Mbappe's future, is playing through the middle as opposed to on the wing? How do you see this? I mean, both of them have done both, obviously.
I think Mbappe's just his intelligence, his reading of the game, how moves are developing. I think he's got that absolute hunger and the sense of a goal, and absolutely can play through the middle like that. But I think with Rashford, he's obviously going to do that under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's going to develop more and more by working with Solskjaer, listening to him. Obviously a great striker in his own playing days. But I think with England, he'll play in a 4-3-3 and he'll play wide on the left. But he showed, particularly when Kane drops off, as it showed against Spain out in Seville, you know, there's such movement there with Raheem Sterling on the right as well. Those three will interchange. And maybe, you know, with Kane dropping from a 9 to a 10, those two will sort of attack in. So he will end up central for England.
Finally, Gab, it was an historic week. The first time VAR has been used in the Champions League and across all four games.
Yeah, sorry, can I just say that, Ali? That's kind of normal. It's only in this country with, like, the funny FA Cup, like, oh, well, we'll use it here, but not there, and for this and not that, because of the state, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally normal. Certain stage of a competition have a level playing field. That's kind of, you know, I know here it's a bit, you know, you guys are long.
It's also new to us.
History of doing things differently, that's fine, you know.
We're just very excited by it. So when we see it implemented, it's, oh, VAR's in use. But really, across the four games, it only really had an impact in Amsterdam. What did you make of it?
Well, in Amsterdam, obviously, there was a huge incident. part of this, I think, is also if it wasn't Ajax and Real Madrid, if it had been two random teams, I think it might have been viewed differently because, you know, you pick up the Catalan press or the Dutch press today and you've got all these VAR-related issues and VAR Madrid and whatever, largely because of one decision that we can talk about. But I think it's also fed by the narrative that this young Ajax side really shocked Madrid, played really, really well in the first half, and really later in the game too, and other than sort of their finishing, which was a bit wayward, but really took the game to them. And on top of that, you have Real Madrid, who are seen as the powers that be, who've won three straight European Cups, some of them with certain decisions that went their way. I'm thinking of the Bayern game a couple years ago. So all these things together, you have this narrative, whoa, what's wrong with VAR? And people reopening the debates as if we hadn't been through all this, you know, last summer in the World Cup, or indeed the year before that, when VAR was introduced in a bunch of leagues, including Germany and Italy.
Don't think there was any real argument. He did was it Tadic was offside when the ball was headed into the net. So that's the objective bit. The subjective bit, was he interfering with Courtois, the goalkeeper? I think it's fairly clear he was. So I can't see why there'd be much of an argument. Okay, it all happened at great speed and nobody would have spotted it. Surely no official would have spotted it had it been played at normal speed. But, I mean, that's part of the reason you have VAR to...
Well, you say that nobody would have. I mean...
Maybe, the
other thing
so
that
hard.
We always need to remember when it comes to assistant referees is that if you're an assistant referee with VAR, you're told to only flag when you're 100% certain. And again, and we don't know this, but a lot of times what you see is VAR overturning an offside and people say, oh, look, that linesman's rubbish, or why is it taking so long for him to flag? Well, you know, the reason is they're told not to flag. So, I mean, to me, the offside seemed pretty obvious, actually.
It was the fact that it was the second phase. There'd been an initial shot that Courtois had stopped, and then it came in again, and your mind was scrambled. But so many things were going on. It would have been an incredible decision if the linesman had identified it and said offside. But, I mean, maybe he would. But there can't be any argument, really, about the final decision, I don't think.
Well, can you also explain that the goal wasn't disallowed because he fouled Courtois, as some people suggested? Maybe the goal was disallowed because
he was just in the way. I mean, he was
interfering with an opponent.
Yeah,
I think is the term, right?
So, yeah.
And you do that simply by standing in a certain position.
Yes,
right?
So you're sort of in his eye line. You're in a position where the goalkeeper doesn't have the ability to move around. You know,
and you're gaining an advantage from being in that position.
Yeah. He's a distraction as well for the goalkeeper, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, and in some ways it's unfair because what's poor Mr. Tadic supposed to do? You know, he can't teleport somewhere else or make himself disappear. But equally, we see this other offside. I generally don't. I mean, maybe it's because Real Madrid played in a Madrid derby at the weekend. There was a whole bunch of VAR-related controversy there, and it's the first season in Spain or whatever. But I didn't quite get this. I mean, I think people are getting accustomed to it. You know, we said it's the only game where it was used, but of course there's silent checks everywhere. We just don't know that they're going on.
Time now for our weekly predictions game. A reminder, Gab, that I do lead this 13-7.
Yeah, okay. It's also because we had that weird week as well when Charlie decided no predictions this weekend for no apparent reason whatsoever, but whatever. That's
fine. At the end of the season, we're going to have a kind of roundup of Gab's 10 best excuses of the season.
No, it's not excuses, it's reality.
It'd be a nice little clip, though, to put together, a little montage. Okay, it is, of course, FA Cup weekend. So let's start at the Amex, Saturday lunchtime. It is Brighton against Derby, Gab. VAR will be in use, no?
They have VAR at the Amex. It's one of the chosen stadiums where you can... okay, so this is interesting because I'm going to assume that Brighton are going to prioritise the Premier League. Mm-hmm. But then I'm going to assume that Frank Lampard Jr. is also going to prioritise the Premier League because they're in danger of... going up, right? They're in the playoffs or
no,
close
just,
to it?
No, just outside.
Okay. So then becomes a case of, gee, whose second string is better than the other team's second string? I'm going to go with the draw at 90 minutes.
Ooh. No replays in the FA Cup fifth round. Has to be decided on the day. Extra time and penalties if needs be. You said you're going for a draw, but what scoreline?
1-1.
1-1. Okay. I just have a feeling Brighton might edge it. I'm going for a 2-1 win in the 90 minutes.
Frank Lampard Jr. won't be pleased.
No. At Rodney Parade, of course, Newport have caused quite a few shocks of late, haven't they, at home in the Cup. This time, of course, they take on Manchester City, 5:30 on Saturday evening.
Obviously, we know what happened in Cup competitions against lower league teams before, and indeed Chelsea as well. So something tells me we will both have the same result. We'll both have the same, you know, result, but
just a different scoreline.
I'm thinking what the scoreline is.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be as emphatic as it was against Burton, let's say. I am going to go for a 4-1 win for City.
4-1. Newport County on the score sheet. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to go City to win 5-0.
Oh, right.
Can I get bonus points for a Phil Foden hat trick? No.
Charlie's nodding.
Charlie's nodding.
Charlie's,
all right.
He's having
That's
that.
Three bonus points, one for each of Phil Foden's goals.
Okay, then. Let's turn our attentions to the game at Ashton Gate, then, in the Cup. It is Bristol City against Wolves, which is a 1 o'clock kickoff on Sunday.
Bristol City have that Gary Johnson's kid.
Me, yeah.
And he's a good manager. He's considered
well,
to
they're
be
doing
good.
Very well.
There
in
you
playoffs,
go.
Yeah.
And they're up against Nuno, who's obviously... He's angering Rafa Benitez, but they're doing pretty well. I would assume, logically, that Wolves are going to put out a strong lineup because why not, right? Mm. I mean, what are they going to do? Like, it's not like they're going to get into the
they're
top four this
season. They're safe in the Premier League. Yeah, yeah, with you.
I'm going to suggest that this game is going to extra time again.
Wow, okay.
0-0.
0-0. Oh, I think that Wolves will get the job done in the 90 minutes. They're going to win this one 2-1.
Again with the Solihull Moors. Haven't we had this stuff before?
Yeah, but they're doing so well.
All right.
They went top of the National League.
The National
this week.
League.
This week because they were victorious in midweek at Aldershot.
They host Barnet.
They do.
Oh, and they've got something in common with Brentford.
They have. The nickname?
Yes.
The Bees. Yes, indeed. We're both
you
bees.
You would think, like, there'd be enough things in this whole wide universe that, like, two teams, both from London, could differentiate. Who came up with the Bees first?
Well, I think, if I'm being honest, I think Barnet would come up with it first because they were in existence before Brentford were.
Is that because they start with the letter B?
I'm imagining so.
Right. Is that why Birmingham are also the Bees?
No, but see, they're not. But isn't it more imaginative to be the Bees than the Blues or the Reds?
But it's even worse.
It's not imaginative if you're copying it from Barnet.
No, but you know what I mean? As in, like, it's not that of all the nicknames in the world.
Even worse, you have three league teams called Robins.
That's it.
Bristol City, Swindon and Cheltenham all in a similar sort of part of the country as well. You know, surely try and distinguish from each other.
That's a bit mad.
Cheltenham's nickname should be the Gold Cuppers or something. As far as I know, Cheltenham's known for two things. It's a spa town, and they have that horse race that's very big in Ireland, the Gold Cup, right?
The Cheltenham Festival, yes.
Yeah, the festival. So come up with a nickname associated with that rather than associated with a bird.
Wouldn't they have to have a horse on their crest or something?
Yeah, and Swindon could be the Roundabouts.
The Roundabouts?
Yeah.
Famous for roundabouts, isn't it?
Swindon? Is it? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right by the ground. There's loads of them.
Mini roundabouts.
Yeah, really little ones and all, yeah.
So.
We digress again.
And Solihull are managed by former Southampton goalkeeper, Timmy Flowers, who I believe also has some England caps too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
They've only been in existence for 12 years, Natalie. This is really impressive.
And
Barnet are doing badly, aren't they?
They're not doing very well. Yeah, they're 17th in the National League. When you consider they wasn't that long ago, they were in the EFL.
I've got my man Timmy and his crew taking this. I'm going to say Solihull Moors 2, Barnet 0.
Oh, that's what I've got. I wouldn't be surprised
How convenient.
I've got it written down. I can show you.
This is the equivalent of playing Catenaccio, isn't it?
Anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if Nathan Blissett scores. That's all I'm saying.
Is he related to Luther?
Is he? Is he related?
He's Luther's nephew, I think.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
I
was thinking more Gary Blissett, next B, of course. But anyway, now.
Perfect segue into one of Luther Blissett's old teams.
Indeed. In Italy, we have Atalanta versus AC Milan.
Yeah, high scoring Atalanta against Milan who are making...
They're doing well, Atalanta, aren't they?
They're doing absurdly well on a very small wage bill. And they're facing a Milan side where people are getting really, really excited for their new striker, Christoph Piontek, who nobody seemed to rate before he came over in the summer. Actually signed for Genoa, scored a ton of goals. He only had one cap before this year. And the guy's 23 years old. It's not like he's 17. And he's up to, I think, 15 goals this season. Mm-hmm. I realize I predicted first last time, so let's see what you have to say.
All right,
you're
that's fine.
Your own copy me.
No, I'm not going to do that. I think they faced each other, I think, in September. It was a 2-2 draw. They're both in good form. I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to be 1-1.
I think Milan get this. PMP, Paqueta, Piontek. Paqueta to set up Piontek and Milan to win 1-0.
Just time to give you the answer then to Bill Edgar's trivia teaser. We asked, Paul Scholes this week became the 8th former England international to be a current manager of a league club when he joined Oldham. Who are the other 7? Now, we suggested 6.
We got 6 of them. They're all correct,
Were they all right that we got? The 6?
5 of the 6 were correct. Firstly, Gab's point about English managers being more prevalent in the lower leagues is correct. And
as
a result, none of these 8 former England players are
managing
in
get
the Premier League.
Right. Yeah. Saul Campbell,
You got...
Steve Bruce.
Hang on, wait. Bill's going to tell us.
So 7 others apart from Scholes. So the one you didn't get when you thought you got was Steve Bruce, who's kind of... famously, the people might say the best player never to play for England, or the best defender. At least on paper, he won multiple titles with Man United, but never.
You think that's a banker as well,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
But
he never
played for England.
I thought he had at least like one throwaway cap.
No, not even a throwaway cap.
Wow, that is.
How did Steve Bruce knock him? Didn't he score like 20 goals in a season 1 year?
Yeah, and when they won the Cup Winners' Cup in 91,
my mind has been blown right now.
Gary Pallister, his centre back partner with Man United, he played plenty of times for England, but he was the one who got chosen, not Steve Bruce.
Well, did Des Walker and people like that play in there with Terry
Des
Butcher?
Walker was, yeah, clearly, yeah.
Des Walker was really fast, but he couldn't really pass the ball, could he? At least not.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Adams obviously was.
All right, we digress.
No.
In the Championship, there's one. Frank Lampard, you're correct
we
in
got
saying
it.
That.
We got that
3
one.
In League One. Joey Barton.
We got
correct.
That one. Well done, Fleetwood.
Lee Bowyer, correct.
Yeah. Very good.
Two with disciplinary Phil's past. And the third one, clue is he got to the League Cup semi-final this year.
Nigel Clough.
Oh, Nigel Clough, yes.
Oh.
He played a 10.
We even mentioned Burton Albion
times.
Earlier.
I know, didn't think.
Yeah. And then into League Two, aside from Scholes, there are 3 others. Sol Campbell, you said. Chris Powell, you said. Yes. And the last one is he was a centre back and right back. I think he played right back for England, if I can remember. He was at Manchester City.
Paul Parker.
No, he was Manchester City. I think he was from Bristol or something. But the club he's at now is the very isolated geographically, and you mentioned them earlier, Carlisle.
The Carlisle manager.
Oh, I know.
Carlson.
No, it's...
No, give me a clue on the player. What is this like? This
well, I've given you quite a lot. I don't know.
Keith Curl. Yes.
Keith Curl.
Yes, well done.
Why couldn't you have said former Wimbledon defender? Yes?
Oh, my God.
Move for
£2.5 million? Because that would have... You would have got it straight away.
Weirdly, because you retain weird facts from your childhood, I would have known that because I think I'm right in saying he moved for £2.5 million from Wimbledon to Manchester City and broke the record at the time held by another English central defender who moved to Manchester United and who you mentioned a few minutes ago. That was Gary Pallister, £2.3 million.
Uh-huh.
So I would have gotten it if you'd only gotten that. Then all this Carlisle nonsense.
That was a good quiz question. We like that one. That is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Henry Winter and Bill Edgar.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times as well as The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online or on your smartphone or tablet. Just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more.
We were back on Monday. Looking ahead to more Champions League action. Aren't we lucky? It is Liverpool, Gab, versus...
Bayern München.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.